The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you, 11 minutes past 10. Very welcome back. It's Wednesday, the 27th of September. How are you all keeping out there? Really do appreciate you being on board with us. We have another 2 hours to keep you informed and entertained, bar the shouting, and our lines remain open for you. Lots coming up, by the way, so don't tune out. Later on, Lisa Lochry is a pension specialist. She's going to be joining me in studio here to answer any questions you might have in relation to pensions. Now, this is an area that I'm not really too up on. I should be. I'm not, but there you go. If you have any questions about pensions, when is it too late to start a pension? What do you need to be putting away? What might you achieve? How safe are they? And all that kind of stuff. Any questions on pensions? 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000, and I'll get your questions directly to Lisa and get your answers as well. There might be something that you've been discussing recently, or you're planning on doing something and you want to know what the story is. I suppose we all should be planning, but I just think sometimes with the cost of living, many of us can't really afford to be paying into a pension, and maybe we're short-sighted. Who's to say? But anyway, might be able to help you. We will be able to answer any questions. Might be able to help you make up your mind. As I say, 086 60 25000, your WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And just to remind you, by the way, that if you wish to send an audio message to us, that's no problem. You can hold down the little speaker on your phone and WhatsApp it to us as well. So that's an issue you want to raise or a comment you want to make. So feel free to send voice messages to us as well. Good morning, Greg. In this day and age, or sorry, in this weird age, you say males were the likely perpetrators of sexual assault, but who's to say what gender they were going by? Another, why is there only a survey done on male and female harassment? Why not a trans survey? Well, I'm sure those figures are there, but it's very easy to forget that the percentage of people that identify as anything other than male and female is tiny. It is absolutely tiny. The way some people react, you'd swear it's like, you know, they're going to overthrow the nation or something. It's a very small percentage of the population, a tiny little percentage of the population. So I don't think, even if those figures were counted, and I'm sure they are, because they'll have an other, I didn't see the other figure, that it's anything for you to worry about. There's very few people that I identify as anything other than male and female, though some do. In the wider population, it's a tiny amount of people. So you've nothing to fear. They're not going to come and rob your house. They're just trying to get on with their lives. Why don't the church open up parish halls or vacant parochial houses to accommodate refugees and homeless? Even better, why don't parish priests in rural Donegal offer up spare bedrooms in parochial houses for such purposes? Maybe they do, I don't know. A caller says his daughter pays €15 per day return to Derry on the bus from Manor, but if she gets a lift to Convoy or Rafo, the bus is only €1 each way on local link. Okay, and is she getting the student rate there? Maybe it's because it's cross-border, she can't apply for that, but... or maybe she's not a student for that matter, I'm presuming she is. That's expensive. That's more than I would spend on diesel or petrol, commuting to and from work a much greater distance, €15 per day. Read the government funding. The government is setting aside billions in funding for the refugees when the children's care system, amongst other services, are on its knees. We're not allowed to say this without being deemed a racist. Of course you're allowed to say without being deemed a racist. Who would call you racist for saying that? And you know, refugees and asylum seekers, they have kids too, so I presume they would welcome proper funding in childcare services. I get where you're coming from, by the way. I'm not feigning shock, but you should be and can say that we're spending billions on our commitments to refugees and international protection. Well, let's use also some of the billions that we're saving for this rainy day and make sure that we fund childcare correctly. I don't think that's unreasonable. I don't think it's racist. This caller says Irish people are second-class citizens in our own country. I know that's pushed around a lot, but if you just think about it and you think of the accommodation these people are in and what have you, you know, international protection person gets €38 per week. That doesn't put them ahead of Irish, I don't think. And a lot of the people, asylum seekers, are living in hotel rooms, which would not be a solution to our housing crisis here for Irish people either. So I don't think we're second class citizens. But I certainly do get that people are angry that more money needs to be found for other services, which would also benefit the 140 odd thousand extra in our population over the last year. Shocking, actually, in terms of I was looking through the statistics on my time off, which is kind of funny because you take time off work and you're busier. There's loads of jobs end up being lined up for you and what have you. But anyway, it's nice to get to work for a break. Joke. But the amount of people emigrating this country is absolutely shocking. Or is it shocking? I don't know. It's up to you guys to think. 64,000 people emigrated from Ireland in the year to April of this year. Now, 30,500 of those were Irish citizens, but 64,000 people emigrated from the Ireland, half of them Irish citizens, less than half actually. But then when you think that the amount of people that did their leaving cert this year was 62,000. So in terms of people emigrating from Ireland, more people emigrated from Ireland than actually sat their leaving cert. Isn't that remarkable? Big trouble with transport at night time. You can't get a taxi and you have to depend on parents. Not fair. They have to stay up or get them out of bed or a friend to come. Something has to be done, like a taxi or bus service. It depends where you are. Express bus to Dublin, Route 32, not express. 4.5 hours to go to Dublin, stopping far too many times. Another, with billions being paid for mass immigration, it's surely time the people were consulted on the most contentious issue of the age. We need a referendum to ask if we support the new EU migration deal. Good morning. I had an appointment in Galway too a few weeks back, very early in the morning, and again my husband had to take time off work. We had to take the two children because of no sitter, stay over in a hotel. So the total cost was around, now this is for an appointment in Galway, this is the average family, mum, dad, two kids, €650 to go to a hospital appointment. That's including hotel, diesel, parking, food. It'll be much simpler this quarter says if a bus was provided. Another, it's a disgrace that sick people have to travel, full stop. It's a disgrace that these services are not sorted locally. What about these top-of-the-range primary care centres that took mega money to put up? A bloody disgrace. I know a few people that have cancer and have to travel for treatment. It's 2023. It needs to be addressed. You can get some treatment locally, but the bottom, it seems there's got centres of excellence are the future, and there seems to be no appetite within the HSE to change that. Greg, the infrastructure is so poor in Donegal. For example, the main road from Buncrana to Derry is chock-a-block every day with cars and long queues going into Derry every day, nearly backed up at the border. Why can't there be a tram even on this route alone? It would save on cars and do a lot for the environment. We were recently in Manchester and so many trams and trains to take you anywhere. We are being failed and are so far behind, it's embarrassing. No planning, no forward thinking. And on it goes. Bus Feeder provides an excellent service from West Donegal via Letterkenny to Galway. It's especially dedicated to students, with late buses on Sunday and Thursdays and Fridays for students and drop-offs at their accommodation for safety. It also has added a service to Limerick University, a brilliant, reliable service by a private operator indeed. And we are talking about sort of, you know, state-provided transport. My son applied for his driving test 2 weeks ago and got a text this week to say it will be February before he's considered for a date. Donegal is a forgotten country for everything, never mind rail. We can't even get a bus. And may I say, and just a word of warning, particularly as we come into winter and a lot of days there won't be any tests done at all, that's an estimate. It's very likely that come the start of January, that could be pushed out to March or April. And that's when he's invited to apply for a test. So as I say, I'm not being negative, but the truth is that I wouldn't be planning to start a job with the view of having a car in February off the back of that estimator, because it's notorious for pushing the date back. And as I say, there's going to be a lot of cancellations over the winter. I appreciate that people are concerned about the lack of bus services, but it does boil down to finances. As a bus operator who's going to run a bus service to accommodate 5 to 6 people, it's just not practical. The private services are there and they're fantastic, getting our children to and from school and all of that kind of stuff, subcontracted from Bus Éireann. They provide, you know, links to different parts of the country. They do that on a commercial basis and make money and do fantastic services. But there is a core service that needs to be provided by a semi-state company such as Bus Éireann, in other words, to get us around at times that's appropriate. So if they are perhaps saying that from now on, you are most likely going to have to go to Galway for certain medical procedures because that's the way it's going to be done into the future, well, then surely you need a proper bus service to take that into consideration. And that's what we don't see. Okay, it is time now for us to take a break for the bingo numbers. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio, and we are going to be talking about pensions. And we invited you to message in any questions you might have. We'll get to those, but we'll have a general chit-chat, because this is Pension Awareness Week, in case you didn't know. Lisa Lochry is Managing Director of John F. Lochry Financial Services. Good morning to you.
Morning, Gray. Thanks for having me in.
How many of us have pensions? Do we know, not an official figure, but is it more do than don't or don't than do?
Definitely more don't than do. Mm. That would be the predominant thing in Ireland. But I suppose the average pension pot in Ireland was about 100,000 to 150,000. So, you know, some people think, oh, you know, a pension is far too big. I don't earn enough to be able to fund for a pension, you know. But when you look at the figures and you look at the average in Ireland, it's not, you know, you can save that much over your lifetime. So you can probably put that much into a pension over your lifetime.
Yeah, and there's different cohorts of people here, isn't there? Because there are those maybe entering the workforce now versus those who are 45 and also and all of a sudden they're thinking, well, you know, I don't have a ton here and can I live on the state pension? So let's start off with people just starting out in work. What is the situation now in terms of auto-enrolment and where are we at in terms of those plans?
That's a good question.
Thanks, I like to start off with a goodie. It's a tough question.
The last time I spoke to you, I told you auto-enrolment was due to be kind of the infrastructure set up in 2023 and that contributions would have to be started from January 2024. We're not there yet. Mm. There's still no word of that. It's kind of been put back to, you know, the second half of 2024 at this stage. So, but I mean, that has been put back numerous times at this stage. They did kind of blame COVID to a certain extent, which is fine. Everybody had to sit back a bit. But, you know, at this stage, like if you're coming into the workforce, if you're young, you know, and the younger generation are actually a lot more aware of pensions and a lot more savvy, you know, and the older generation are actually now looking at that as well. So you're coming to a stage where the entire population are thinking about it more now. I'm under no illusion. Pensions are not, you know, the topic of the week. They're boring. Nobody wants to think about them, but they do know they have to think about them and they're starting to think that way, mm-hmm. which is good.
I think it's the name. I think they called it like older person fun fund. You know, like the fun fund or something. I think it's back to pet. But we'll get through people starting off and when you can join in. But there's a reality here that we have an aging population and that's a good thing. Yeah. But that's why we're having conversations about the retirement age and what have you, because there's a basic maths here that we could end up with a smaller cohort of people trying to fund a bigger pension pot. Exactly. So then you have, because we sort of say, well, could I survive on the 280 or whatever it is at the moment? Is it going to be 280? Are you going to get it when you're 65, 66, 67? Yeah. So we actually don't really know in 20 years' time, you know, a 50 or 40-year-old, what the situation will be then. So there is a big problem and it's right across the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we don't know what state pension might be there and when it might be available to be drawn down. That's just a reality.
Exactly. No, and I think that's obviously what the government are trying to make provisions for, because they know that, like, at the minute, you know, the state pension's €265.30 a week. You know, that's roughly €13,800 per annum. But the way we are with the workforce, there's so many more people coming into retirement now than there is coming into the workforce. Yeah. So, like, that's how the pension system is sustained at the minute. That's now unsustainable going forward, you know.
And can I throw another spanner in the work?
Yeah, go on ahead.
home ownership. A lot of people at retirement age now do own a home. Mm-hmm. As the generations come through, there's going to be the pressure of rental accommodation, because home ownership is not going to be achieved by as many people as it was in the past. So maybe if an older person has paid off the mortgage, there's a security there and that 13,000 can, you know, go a bit further. But there's already people in that situation, but we're going to see more and more people in the situation whereby they're also having to pay rent still.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And a rate, you know, housing uncertainty. So again, that's perhaps why you don't want to leave yourself reliant on the state pension alone.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the way, and that's why they are trying to, you know, put in the auto enrollment system. You know, it definitely will benefit the workforce, you know, because people who haven't thought about it, it will make them actually have to address it. It's going to be an opt-out system rather than an opt-in, and that's they've done that on purpose. They've seen it working in other EU countries. So basically, everybody will be automatically enrolled in the pension system. So once you're from 23 to age 60 and you're earning more than €20,000 per annum, you will be enrolled in a pension. Then it's up to you to actually actively opt out of that pension. Mm-hmm. And they have found that, you know, a lot more people will stay in because, you know, as much as people don't like to think about it, neither do they bother opting out sometimes of these things.
But I think it being a part of your wage or a deduction from it sort of normalises it, doesn't it? So in terms of how much you really need to be putting in, so we start with someone, say, maybe 24, 25.
Do you know what?
What typical examples do you want to give us?
I did a few figures just knowing that I'd be coming in just to give you an idea. And these are very basic, so it's just to give you an idea. So I suppose if somebody put in €100 per month from age, so I've kind of, you know, tiered
perfect.
It. So if you just started at age 30, because realistically a lot of people don't think mm-hmm. about it. They're lucky if they start at 30. So you could expect a pension pot there. If you put in €100 per month from 30 to age 65, about €100,000 fund
okay.
at the end. Okay. So that's not kind of saying, okay, I'll start with 100 and I'll increase it or anything like that. You're just doing that throughout your working life.
Right. Now, say, for instance, you did that to the age of 35 and then you became unemployed for a year. What happens if you don't maintain that payment? Can you stop and pick it up? Or because people might go, well, I don't know if I can afford it into the future. So, I mean, obviously that would then affect your pot at the end.
Yes,
but can you pause and resume depending on your financial
Absolutely.
Situation?
And to be honest, if you're not earning, there's no point in making a pension contribution mm-hmm. because you only get the tax relief on earnings. You know, so by all means, what you would do is just not make contributions while you're not working. When you restart, then you're going to, you know, restart your contributions. If you can up them a little bit to try and make up for the lost time, all well and good. Like what I would normally say to people, and I know, you know, everyone's finding it tight with the cost of living and everything at the minute, but equally people are now getting pay raises and, you know, incremental increases in mm-hmm. their pay. And that's very much, you know, I think employers are very aware that they have to do that at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
If you can afford to do that whenever you get a pay increase, just put even some of it, say, no, I'm going to start a pension with that, you know, because mm-hmm. then you haven't seen it coming into your pocket, so you're never going to miss it, you know.
And I think, too, if the truth be told, I think the majority of us really don't have a full grasp on our incoming, well, maybe the income more so, but our outgoings.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, like we probably don't. So in other words, if you had a look at that, you could probably find the money somewhere depending on your situation. So in terms of, you know, tax relief and what have you, how is that €100 treated? It does cost us €100. Does the state add anything to it or do we get tax back or how does that work?
Okay, so I suppose there's two different things. The auto enrolment will be slightly different, but as it stands at the minute, so it depends on what rate of income tax you pay. So if you pay just pay tax at the 20% rate, then if you put in €100 into your pension, it'll cost you 80. So you'll only see your pay reducing by €80, okay? Because basically, instead of taking the €20 tax off, they're actually allowing you to put the full €100 into the pension.
Mm.
And then if you're paying tax at the higher rate, so if you're putting €100 into your pension, you'll actually only see your pay reducing by €60. Okay. So there is definitely.
So you're
benefits.
Saving. I mean, I don't think there's any interest rate that comparable to that.
No.
So you're saving €100 for €80 or for €60, dependent on your income.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I kind of, if you look at it another way around, because I thought I was trying to think how to maybe phrase it better so that people get a better understanding of what they're doing. And I thought, well, if you're going into retirement, you know, there's very few people probably go into retirement with no nest egg,
mm-hmm.
right? It mightn't be a pension, but they'll have a property or they'll mm-hmm. have savings put aside. So I thought, well, if you had 100,000 of savings, okay, to that you knew, well, that's going to be my nest egg and that's what I'll live off. If you think about it, if, you know, it whenever, if you paid tax at the lower rate even, it took you €125,000 worth of your income to save that 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, if you were on the higher tax rate, it actually took you 166,000 of your pay to save that 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you had just put that into a pension rather than taking it as earnings and kind of saved it personally, you would have either 125,000 or a pot of 166,000 yeah. without any growth. Mm-hmm. You know.
Got you. Now, people might be nervous about pensions because, you know, dipping into pension funds, crashes, in pension investments disappearing. I lost everything. I've been paying in for this for years. Are there any protections on pensions like there are on savings, for an example? What do you say to people who go, you know what, I'd prefer to pump it into my property because the bricks and mortar will be there? Well,
yeah.
In Donegal, you wouldn't know, but you know what I mean. So how safe is this money that you're putting away?
Yeah, I mean, like the insurance company. So for a pension in Ireland, you have to do it through one of the insurance companies, okay? And the insurance companies, there's never been question marks over the insurance companies in Ireland.
I'll bring this a little closer to you.
Yeah, sorry. If you start maybe taking a bit more risk and you're moving to like random funds that maybe aren't the run of the mill funds, then you are starting to take more risk because maybe they're unregulated products. If you go into a regulated product, there has never been one of those defaults.
But it's risk and return, isn't it? And some people split it up a little bit, don't they?
Yeah.
And they go, right,
so, I mean, like anybody coming into us, and it's a lot more regulated now, like the first thing we have to do is complete a risk profile questionnaire. And a risk profile questionnaire is going to kind of give us an idea of how much risk somebody is or isn't willing to take. So, I mean, within any insurance company, they have a range of funds, but and the funds range in terms of risk from a 1 to 7. So a 1 is a cash fund. So you can essentially go into a cash fund. Now, for a few years there, the cash funds, if you went in, you were getting a negative return. It wasn't much, but you were going marginally down in value. Today, like the cash funds with the insurance companies are given about 3.5% return, you know, and even if you have a 1% annual management charge, you're making 2.4% mm-hmm. without taking any risk whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now let's go up a little bit. Someone's 50.
Yeah.
Starting to panic now.
Yeah.
Because it's just around the corner, or it feels like it's just around the corner, even though they've probably got maybe, you know, 16, 17, 18 years left of work. Is it too late then? Like, is there a point it's too late to start putting in a pension?
No, like, well, if I go back to my figures, if you're still only putting in the 100 euro per month from age 50 to 65, you've obviously, your period's mm-hmm. a lot tighter. You've only the 15 years. You're looking at a fund of about 25,000 at that stage rather than the 100, okay? Now, the only thing about that, like people do, that's like one question. Oh, sure, I'm too old. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no point in me starting a pension at this stage. If you have been working somewhere for a while and, you know, you could manage to put away that 25,000 in your last, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever, you can probably take that full amount as a tax-free lump sum at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're working for somewhere for an extended period, you can actually fund 1.5 times your final salary to take as tax-free cash. So other people who have a fund of 100,000, they might only be able to take 25,000 of it as tax-free cash and the rest has to be taken as a pension over time, or, you know, as pension income. Whereas, like, there's definitely, the first thing you can do is fund for a tax-free lump sum at your retirement. So there's every point in doing that, because as I said, if you go back to the thing, if you took the 25,000 as cash, you're either only going to get 15,000 or 20,000 into your hand.
Okay, so, well, actually, that comes in as a question. So,
okay, perfect.
We're using the 100K as an example.
Yeah.
So if you've managed to fund a 100K pension as it stands now,
yeah.
How much of a pension do you get at retirement?
Okay, so if we go, do you know what, I'm going to use 100 and, yeah, we'll go with 100,000, sorry.
It's only rough figures.
Yeah. So look, there's a few different things then. So I'll just kind of give you a rough rundown. There's two different ways you can draw the tax-free lump sum out of it. So it's either going to be as 25% of the pot. So you might be able to take 25,000 as tax-free lump sum. And then the other 75,000 you have to use to buy an annuity. Okay. So annuity rates at the
minute. Here comes the calculator, everybody.
Annuity rates.
Who said pension people were boring?
Ah, come on now. Okay. So the other 75,000 has to be used to buy an annuity. The annuity rates are roughly, you can get an annuity for about 5% at the minute. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to use that. So that would give you an income of 3,750 per annum.
Okay.
Okay. So you've taken your 25,000 as tax-free cash, then you can take your, I've that the wrong way around, actually. You can fund for 1.5 times your final salary
mm-hmm.
and you have to buy the annuity. So if you say somebody's on 40,000, right? they can fund for a tax-free lump sum of 60,000, so 1.5 times your final salary. Right. So 60 out of the 100 would go into your hand as tax-free cash. Then the other 40 you'd use to buy your annuity. So that's giving you a pension then of €2,000 per annum along with that.
And what happens if you pass away before the remainder of that pension is drawn down?
These are kind of the things that you have to think about. And it's individual to every person because, you know, everyone has different circumstances and different family circumstances. But with that route, so you've got a higher tax-free cash, you've got your 60,000 into your hand, your 2,000 pension a year. But when you pass away, the 2,000 pension dies with you, essentially, okay? Unless you've provided for a spouse's pension, which sometimes you can provide for a 50% spouse's pension, or a guaranteed period of 10 years. So if you're within the 10 years, it would continue up to the 10 years. The other route then, which has been more popular, would be where you take 25% of the pot as tax-free cash. So that's 25,000 out of the 100,000. The other 75,000 in that circumstance is invested similar to what you were investing with before you drew the pension. So you're investing with an insurance company, you choose the fund, you're obviously trying to make a return, and then you have to take an income of about 4 or 5% from that per annum. But you could choose to take a lump sum out of that equally. So you're taxed at your income tax rate on any pension income. So be that the 2,000 out of the annuity or be it whatever you're taking out of your approved retirement fund, the 4 or 5%. So what you're doing at that stage is that you're trying to make sure you're either paying very little or no tax if possible.
Yeah. Okay, so this is why you need a pension advisor, really, because...
Do you know what? It's very complicated.
Honestly, I probably lost you there. No, you didn't. You've explained it. What I thought was, right, that you saved... I thought that you save for a pension, you get 100 grand, and it's an extra 10 grand a year into your pocket for 10 years, or, like, it was your money... Right, and that if you died 2 years later and you'd only took 20 grand, that 80 grand would become part of your estate, but it's not like that.
Well, that second example, so the approved retirement fund where you take, so you've taken 25,000 tax-free cash, the 75,000 goes into the approved retirement fund. That approved retirement fund does pass to your estate on death. Right. Okay, so that's the difference between the two routes.
Understood. Yeah, okay. I'm being overtaxed, this quarter believes. Yeah. Well, I think they believe they're paying, you know, I'm not paying into a pension, but if I was, would it reduce my tax?
Yes. It depends on if they're employed, they should see it on their pay slip that if they're putting in pension contributions, you know, they'll pay less tax. If they're self-employed, and this is where it's more obvious, and this is where Pensions Awareness Week comes in, because for self-employed people, the income tax deadline now is the end of October or the 15th of November if you do your pay and file online, okay? So with that, you've earned your income all throughout the year, but then you're hit with this big tax bill at the end.
Yeah.
So whenever you're hit with a tax bill like that, you know, if you have a tax bill of €5,000, say, this person, if they're self-employed and they have to pay now €5,000, if they decide to put €5,000 into a pension... and they're paying tax at the higher rate. So if they think they're paying a lot of tax, they probably are. So that means that actually there's €2,000 tax relief they'll get. So their €5,000 that's going to go to the tax man is reduced down to €3,000. So they're kind of putting €5,000 into a pension and then they're reducing their tax by €2,000. So there's €3,000 going into the tax man. So
yeah, I get you.
It's kind of, that's going to cost
money
them eight,
into their pocket.
Yeah, but five of it's gone into their pocket again, you know.
My husband did a pension plan all his life, but anytime he had no work and had to sign on, the pension was taken into consideration and he could never get the full dole money.
I haven't come across that before. I mean, normally if you're paying your stamps, you'll get, you know, your illness benefit. I haven't seen a pension being taken into account against it, but that's not to say it hasn't been.
Can I ask a question about a pension? Can you check an old work pension if you've no paperwork? The business is closed now. Is there a central register?
Yeah, because this is the thing. Like loads of people, you know, you maybe worked for 5 years at the beginning of your career and moved on, and then, you know, people don't realise they have these wee pension pots sitting about the place. So basically, if you come into a company like us, we get you to sign, it's called a letter of authority. And we're able to send that to all of the insurance companies. So once we have your name, your date of birth and your signature allowing us to make an inquiry on your behalf. So basically, you know, we've done that for numerous people because you know, people go, I did have a pension. It might have been Irish Life. It might have been New Ireland.
Mm.
And obviously they had it through their company. So it might have been John F. Lowry Financial Services, and John F. Lowry's not there anymore. And they don't know where to go, you know. So you come in, sign a letter of authority. We can kind of blanket all the insurance companies with it and get any information on any pension policies you have. So.
I think we've been covering this because this is an early text. Was just wondering, how do I go about setting up a pension, and who do you go to set up one, and how safe is it? I'm 29. So you've talked about the safety element of it. I presume you go into a company like John F. Lowry Financial Services.
Yeah, I suppose there are kind of, you can go and start looking online, but I have to say, like, the pension legislation and regulation and everything, even in the last 2 years, it has changed so dramatically. Like, we're learning things every day in the industry.
Mm.
And it just, like, I would strongly recommend taking advice on it, you know. And if you go to a brokerage, it means, as I said, like, we have access to all of the insurance companies. So some of the banks might be tied to just a particular company. Uh-huh. Whereas, like, if you go to somebody who's not tied, then it means, you know, they're accessing everybody on the market for you.
A caller says, I'm 56. Is it too late for a pension? And how much would I need to be investing at this stage to benefit? Well, it's how much you'd want to sort of
get out.
So if you could afford 400 a month.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you gave the 100 a month example, so it would probably be about 18, 19, judging by the figures you give for someone who's 50, right? So, I mean, it depends on how much they can afford. But what would be the advantage to that 56-year-old putting that in a pension versus just putting it into a separate account?
Well, as I said, they're getting full tax relief on it. So, you know, if they're paying tax at the higher rate, they're getting, you know, 40% tax reliefs. And, like, you'll never take that money personally and get a 40% return on it, or, you know, it would have to be. But, like, they should be able to put that away. And from age 60, there's a possibility they'll be able to take that all out as tax-free cash. So, I mean, they can put in, at this stage, you'd be throwing in as much as you can afford to, get tax relief on it, and in 4 to 9 years' time, depending on when you want to retire, you know, get as much of that as tax-free
cash. What if your circumstances change, you lose your job or something, or you're squeezed, a medical emergency, you need to access funds? Can you access pension funds?
So pensions, generally, it's from 60 to 75. Now, if you have left an employment, there is a possibility you could access your pension from age 50. Okay, so they're like these paid up pots of pensions where we say from previous employments, you've technically left that employment, you know, and there is every chance that you can access that from age 50. That's as it stands now. There is kind of talk again that, you know, legislation around that could be changing. They might increase it to 55. But as it stands right now, if you have a pension from a previous employment, you can actually access that from age 50. So again, you know, definitely worth making an inquiry about. You know, and as I said, go to somebody that's maybe impartial, or not even the company that it's with or that you took it out with, because they might, you know, they will give you every option, but every option can look daunting when it's in front of you on a page. You know, they'll send you out retirement options and there might be 6 options and you're going, there's too much detail here, you know, to get into the nitty gritty. So
it is. There's an awful lot in this that makes us bury our heads in the sand and not do it.
Yeah.
And anyone I've spoken to in financial circles, and not just those that provide services, say that this is something, because you have to plan. You have to say, well, what is your situation going to be when you hit retirement age? The reality is as well too. People are going to now. There's a lot of people now that will comfortably live well into their 80s, 90s, and even perhaps beyond.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we've outlined. Is there anything important that you think we need to add in there, Lisa?
No, I mean, there was a couple of wee things, like the auto enrolment, when it does come in, you know, some people are saying, oh, I'll wait for auto enrolment because it's going to come down the line anyway.
But we've already seen it deferred a full year.
Yeah, till there. If you're on the lower tax rate, auto enrolment will benefit you, because the tax relief on an auto enrolment pension is essentially going to be about 30%. So if you're on the lower rate, it'll make every sense in the world to go into your auto enrolment scheme. If you're paying tax at the 40%, it's probably still going to make better sense for you to make personal pension provision.
Will both products be available side by side, though, obviously?
They will, but as I said, the tax relief is higher. If you're paying tax at the higher rate, you're going to get more tax relief by doing a personal plan.
Right, so finally say I'm that 29-year-old and I'm going to write, I need to do something here. Do I make an appointment with your company or a similar company? We sit down and you go, what's your income? What do you hope to achieve?
Exactly.
And say, for instance, you talked about the two different types of pensions. Can you adjust midway through?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the other thing. Just because auto-enrollment's coming in doesn't mean you can't start a pension now. And then when auto-enrollment comes in, you can opt into your scheme, you know, through your work. And we'll tell you honestly, like, if that makes more sense, you know, you're better to do it. But your other pension is still there in the background and can be let sit, you know, and you can still use it at retirement. Like, I mean, any money you put into a pension, it doesn't go away. It doesn't disappear. It'll always be there to benefit you at your retirement, you know. So, no, I would definitely kind of say look at it sooner rather than later, especially when you're younger. The biggest thing is probably affordability. And if you can afford to start a pension at all, or you can afford to put in anything, that's a big thing. Because when you're that age, you don't know what your career is going to bring.
No.
You know, you don't know what family circumstances you're going to have. You have no idea what age you might retire at. So you just, based on affordability, start a pension. And then once you have it started, you're much more inclined to monitor it and keep an eye on it.
I know, I hear people go, oh, I'm due this and that at this stage. And I'm like, stuff you.
Yeah.
I'm not.
You need to get on the ball.
I'm glad for people. Lisa Lochry, Managing Director of John F. Lochry Financial Services. You can search them out if you want to speak to the company. Thanks for joining us and give us a handout as part of Pension Awareness Week. It's been lovely having you in
studio. Thank you for having me.
Okay, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. 086 60 25000. Loads of you texting in on pensions. Some of them comments and not questions, so we'll get to them in a mo. And plenty on buses and everything right across the whole spectrum there, so we appreciate it. Now, you will know that we have been covering the situation here in Donegal in terms of disability services and the availability to young people. It was triggered off the back of parents and caregivers receiving letters saying that the CDNT services weren't available to them, OP, speech and language. We've heard numerous stories of parents who've feel their children are missing out. They're 6 years of age, haven't seen anyone. It's an awful situation. We talked about recruitment as well. That is a big issue, but we know now that the families are saying, well, what can you do for us right now in terms of availing of private services, emergency provisions, whatever it might be? So there's two trains here, right? One train is the medium to long term in terms of recruitment, hiring people, sorting out this crazy nonsense of the recognition of Northern Irish qualifications. People from Donegal who want to work here can't, because they can't jump through these hoops and wait a year to earn money. But then there's the more short and medium term. Can they do a national treatment purchase type fund deal to get these young people the invaluable services, the essential services that they really need right now? This issue has also been taken up by politicians, of course, Councillor Albert Doherty amongst them, who joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Albert. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
Right, so you raised, what was the question, truncated if possible, that you put to the HSE?
Yeah, I asked HSE Disability Service to review, evaluate the roles and the positions deemed required. I asked them to prioritise the filling of such vacancies. I asked them to analyse and review the effectiveness of their panel system. And I also asked that they look at the lack of availability of speech and language therapists, OTs, physiotherapists, and all of those that should be available, accessible, and there for our families. And yes, I did attend the community meeting on September 5th. I was shared the letter that the parents received, and it was a very, very tough reflection on our situation.
I'm going to have to move it forward a little bit, Albert. Sorry, and it's our fault because we put you through before the news. No, it's not your fault. No need to apologise. But we know there are 37 vacancies at the moment. We know services are being provided to the most serious of cases, but we've spoken to very serious cases, no services for them either. What did they say to you that's in any way useful?
Yeah, a number of things, but just I wanted to say that when they gave me a good analysis of how the three areas of CDMM were affected there, CDMT. You know, it jumped out at me as well that Donegal Easton and Inishowen had 56% of approved posts that were vacant. The Donegal North had 58%, and Donegal Southwest, thankfully, had, and I shouldn't say thankfully, Leslie had only had 14%. So the HSE has got to look at that as well. But the HSE have now promised me that they will commence an action plan to further develop measures to attract staff into the CDMT. They also emphasise something else, that it will take national level measures in addition to local measures. Mm. And that inspired me to put a motion for the attention of Minister Rabbit, who stormed out of a meeting down south when 14 posts that had not been approved. Sitting up here in Donegal, we're sitting on 35 posts. And we learned yesterday that CAMS, that there's up to 11.6 posts that could be filled up here. And I now want to see progress on this emergency action plan. And I want to see national and local measures taken. But I also want, and I've involved ETB as well as the council, I want to see how we as a region can explore what's preventing would-be applicants from the north.
But we know what that is. We know what that is. It's the long, drawn-out process of recognising these qualifications. It's additional qualifications required.
Coru and our national politicians have a job to do to ensure that there's a more accessible, progressive, welcoming role in registration from the various parts of the world.
Are either your party colleagues, Pearse Doherty or Paul McLaughlin, going to raise this issue in the Dáil on behalf of Donegal parents?
Most certainly. This is an issue that I've long stood with, and I will persevere until the children of our county can have equal access, equal opportunities, and deserved opportunities to access therapists and support in the county.
For sure, we appreciate the political attention locally, but we need these parents and these stories heard at a national level, I think, also. Listen, Councillor Albert Doherty, again, I'm really sorry that I had to rush you through there.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time, though, and we'll go through that response in a little bit more detail. It doesn't really tell us anything we didn't know previously, and until they get this recognition of qualifications thing sorted, there's no point having job fairs up in Derry and recruitment drives there, because people know the system is so convoluted that it is not worth their time going through.